हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीमद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 42 top.
Desiring Labdho Pashanti, the yogi avoids all godlessness and keeps himself in absolute harmony with the Lord. He places the Lord's lotus feet within his heart and worships them at every moment.
18. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur renders verse 18 as follows.
The yogi is desiring to give up the world which is not Brahman. Thoroughly know that impersonal aspect of Vishnu defined as not this by avoiding erring intelligence concerning the Lord's nature and avoiding everything not related to the Lord. While embracing at every moment the worship of lotus feet of the Lord with their whole heart.
Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary,
why do the gunas not exist in him? He is superior to Prakriti. He has attained the impersonal form of Vishnu. That is famous. But the devotees like Narada understand this much more than the jnanis do. Desiring to give up the false world, atat, they know completely that Brahman, which is defined as not this, right? Because that is that, right? Means technically you have this and that. So Brahman is basically not this.
Yes.
So when the Shastras are talking about that, they're specifically meaning the spiritual world, because actual liberation is relationship with the Lord. That's actual that. Mm-hmm. But technically you can call Brahman that, but here then it's not this, because that's their position that they're looking at. I'm not in the material world. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're worried about getting into the spiritual world. Or I'm not in the spiritual world, I'm just outside the spiritual world, right? You know, that would look kind of dumb, right? But you're outside the material world, that looks pretty good.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that means spiritual.
That is transcendental. This is here. So when they're saying not this, means it's not material. It's transcendental. It'll be the opposite, but it'll be a little different than how we generally define that.
But they don't have a concept of that.
They don't have a concept. But here we see is how it's worded. It can be a yogi who does understand, or it can be an impersonalist. Because getting out of the material world is the same process. The getting into the spiritual world, that's bhakti. Right? So here is by absorbing in the Lord, and that you'll get out. Right?
Yes.
But if you want to get in, then that has to be done with bhakti.
Yes.
So then what is the meaning you are that in this context?
You are that, meaning you are transcendence. But we're pointing out is the real that is the spiritual world. So we could also say you are that means you are part of the spiritual world. You're part of that relationship. You're part of that scene, not this scene.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, wrong block. Right? You're supposed to be on that block. You know, this is our block. Yeah. Yes.
What is the meaning of avoid everything that is not Krishna? I don't remember what it said.
I mean here.
Yeah.
Means whatever's not connected to the Lord, because we've started off as a universal form, so the yogi is connecting everything to the universal form, so it's all connected to the Lord.
Exactly. So how does he avoid things that are not connected if everything is connected?
But you have to see like that to avoid. So in other words, the successful yogi is one who always sees like that.
Does that make sense? Because if he doesn't see it like that, he won't be a successful yogi. That makes sense?
Yeah, it's just strangely worded.
Because this is worded in a way that it has this broad meaning. Because we're dealing with transcendence here. Some will follow this only to get to the liberated platform. Right? But the point is, this is the quick method in any way to get out of the material world. But to do it from the Ashtanga Yoga system, the qualities required, the effort and everything is so great. So we do the same thing by connecting everything to Krishna. So when we say is that he avoids all godlessness, means he avoids anything that's not connected to the Lord. So that means you only see everything connected to the Lord, and therefore you only act in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So it applies for the devotee. What they do to attain this, they give up the bad intelligence, duratmyam, of the jnanis involved in impersonal Brahman alone. Okay, so now we're dealing with now he's pointing out the devotional yogi, right? How? They do not have affection for things not related to Vishnu, right? Because Brahman, as the impersonalists see it, is not connected to Vishnu. Because Vishnu, the meditation upon the form of the Lord, then is a temporary process, right? Until you get to the platform of transcendence, right? Because you're in the mode, so you conquer that by focusing on Vishnu, who is the personification of the highest form of goodness, according to their. They don't understand highest form means Vishuddha Sattva, means beyond, but they're taking it within the material world. So that's the best. But once you get there, then you will drop that, and then they'll just be Brahman. So that means that one can't be successful in that way. Right? So real impersonalists understand that Vishnu is Brahman, but they're not interested in the relationship with the person. That makes sense? So it's not that Sukadeva Goswami, as a Brahman realized person, has any problem talking to Krishna as the Supreme Brahman. It's not a problem. It never occurred to them to actually have a relationship with the Supreme Brahman. Does that make sense?
So you go to the top of the goodness.
To elevate yourself, and then from there you're trying to get to pure goodness. But technically, you can't get there if you don't accept Vishnu.
You drop it, and then there's...
Yeah, because if we're a real impersonalist, means he accepts that there's only Vishnu, right? And so everything here is Vishnu. It's all Brahman. So there is no illusion. Illusion is that you think there is one. So there's a difference. The Mayavadis, their point is, if you can see it, it's illusory. Right? So there's a very different approach. So Mayavadis are in the class of impersonalists, simply because that's where they claim they are. But technically, they're not.
If it exists, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, it exists. Is that...
Basically. You could say. But then the point is what's the whole meaning of that whole discussion?
Exactly.
You know? So the thing is you can't understand it anyway. You know, so that's the whole problem is their whole method is not good. So we see here is that Vishnu is pointing out how a devotee yogi is using this. Because the point is it always applies, so it should apply in all the yogis. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the point is by only being absorbed in the Lord, seeing everything in connection to the Lord, only doing things that are connected to the Lord, then only you will become freed from the material entanglement. Okay, how? They do not have affection for things not related to Vishnu. The yogis embrace the lotus feet of Vishnu, who is worthy of worship of every moment with his heart, considering that is all in all. When they desire to realize only the Brahman aspect of the Lord, they desire to give up the etat, everything except that. But they do not give up the visible world because it is useful for serving the Lord. Thus the words desire to give rather than give up are used.
The word duratmyam means those fools who think that the body of Vishnu is material. Right? So, it's not because if you're dealing with the Lord on the Shanta Rasa, it can be an impersonal position. Right? So they're appreciating the form of the Lord, that he is transcendental. So they're not at any time thinking the form of the Lord is material. Just that they're not necessarily worried about having a relationship, right? But as devotees, then we're following the same process, but you want a relationship with the Lord. So then that naturally develops. Does that make sense? Yes.
As devotees in Shantarasa,
yes,
we still want some kind of a relationship.
It's basically, it's more appreciation, yes. But what I'm saying is that you could be from that, that's an appreciation, but your actual position is just to be situated in Brahman. So in other words, when they're talking here about that holding the Lord's feet in the heart and only accepting that is all in all, it's simply on the level of that he is the supreme Brahman. So they appreciate his qualities. But their interest to gain from that process is just to be impersonally situated. But the devotee, then he's using that to move into a relationship with an active relationship with the Lord, whether it's in any of these five rasas. Does that make sense? The point why it comes up that this, it has these dual meanings, is because the process of getting out is the same. There's only one process, right? You know, that's absorption in the Lord that will get you out.
But why would you end up in Shantarasa? It seems to, I mean, because...
So some have that interest, it's their taste.
You have a bucket of halwa.
Right.
And then you're just appreciating, you're just sitting there appreciating it. You don't want to take a bite. That seems odd.
Well, it's not that they don't interact. The trees, they, you know, they make shade, they make flowers and that. But it's the prominence is just appreciating that he's so nice. It's just like, let's say you appreciate so much, you don't really interact. You're just happy to be around. You know, it's not that you won't do something. They say, give me that. It's not that, but it's not about that you're looking for service. You just like being around.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suppose so.
You know, it's just like this. People who run sweet shops, do they eat much sweets?
No.
No, but they like being around sweets.
They probably did eat a lot of sweets.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
I don't even know. So the point is, Shanta has its... That, but if that increases, it gets more deep, then it turns into servitorship. Right? And then that deepens friendship, that deepens, it just keeps going.
It's different.
They're just talking about how what is the relationship between them. Yeah, you're just talking about the mechanics of there's this rasa. When you have this quality, when that deepens, that becomes this one, and that becomes this. So, in other words, the next one already includes the last one, right? So servitorship already includes Shanta, friendship already includes servitorship and Shanta, right? So that's the significance. It's not that we do that; it means we have, but we might find in that. That element of Shanta, then there's the dynamic aspect. So we see that Rupa Goswami generally discusses rasa as four. It means you give the generic, there's five. But in dynamic, there's only four. And then speaking about what's, you know, the speciality of Braj, then there's three. Is that you have servitorship, you have Shanta, but the prominence in relationship, if you hear about the friends, the parents, and the gopis, right? Means the cows, the grass, the trees, the animals, the servants, they're only assisting these others in their pastimes. You know what I'm saying? You don't hear of a pastime between Krishna and Dhanishta. Does that make sense? But Dhanishta is part of the scene with Krishna and the gopis. or Krishna and Mother Yashoda. Does that make sense? So they're assisting in there. So they have prominent roles, but the pastime is not about them. Right? It's just like Krishna goes out with the cows, but what do we hear about in interaction? Yeah, the cowherd boys, the gopis. You do hear the thing, he gets up in Tirukadamba, plays the flute, the different heads of the groups come, bring all their cows along with. But that's all the more. We heard another story. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. But you always hear about the others. So the shanta is to create the environment for the other rasas. Does that make sense? You know, like you want to do a drama, so you set the place up for it. It enhances the drama. That's the, you know, does that make sense? You have a restaurant. You know, so you set it up so that it's, you know, suitable for eating. You want to charge more, you just buy, lower watt light bulbs. You know, stuff like that. You know, it's just, you just change the environment. So then it...
so you save on electricity and you charge.
Yeah. Come on. It's a racket.
All right.
Yes. So he appreciates. You hear him always appreciating all these things. He's talking about going around, seeing, appreciate. So he's one of the prominent persons within the Shanta Raj. So Narada, then you hear of that. But what I'm talking about is Braj. Because in the overall, there's five rasas. But in Braj, three are prominent. Like that. Servitorship is only an assistance to the others. While in Vaikuntha, then servitorship is the prominence. Does that make sense? But, as we'll see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a lot of devotees in Shanta Ras, you know, that every day come into Vaikuntha, you know, and where they're coming from, I'm not sure, but every day when the gates open, you know, like that for darshan, they're all coming in from all over the place. So maybe they're just living in another place on the planet, but, you know, all kinds of devotees. So, you know, when I mentioned horse heads, this set up, I mean, this is what's happening. It's all going on. Okay. So fools think that the body of Vishnu is material. So that means any kind of impersonalist who doesn't think of the Lord's body as Brahman and is eternal is actually a fool. So they're not real yogis, and they will never get to the liberated platform. They'll talk about it. They may have their moments, but then you'll see once they get to those moments, then they drop back, and then they start doing philanthropic work. But they can't stay there.
Is there a place in this wheel where it's most likely that they will make a switch, or is it equal chance?
It's only by association.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is by association.
Often we see that people join because they're in pain. It seems that that's more prominent than...
Well, they're also in pain. They're just perceiving it. Right? It means the jnani's motive for liberation is pain. That's the point. Karma and jnana is removal of pain. Right? The one is the specifics of the pain of a particular aspect of the material energy. The jnani is the material energy.
That's such,
like that. Just everything. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, in other words, the Bhakti Misra Yogi serves the Lord in order to attain his goal of experiencing the happiness of liberation. Right? So he's serving, but he wants the taste of liberation. Just like karma yogi means, you know, bhakti, I say, the karma misra bhakti yogi, then he wants the taste of dealing with the activities. Because that was the point being made before, is that in dealing with this process of elevation, of connecting oneself with everything with the Lord, there are those who are enamored by the... How do you say? The things that are being connected. Right? The pure devotee is not worried about what is connected. It's just what is engaged. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's just like, let's say, like you're saying, someone's cooking for Krishna and they're just worried about the cooking and what's the best facility for cooking. So you might have a nice kitchen because then you can do nice cooking for Krishna. But it's not about the kitchen, it's about cooking for Krishna. But then there are those who are into outfitting a nice kitchen. You have this from here, that from there, and this one this, and this rack for hanging that and there. Don't touch that, that was from this place, you know, all that kind of stuff. So in other words, they're doing it for Krishna, but there's also that enamorment by what they're using in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So that's what's misra. Is that there's the interest in the items being offered to the Lord along with the offering. Does that make sense? Yes, that's us.
And when that goes completely crazy, then you have a karma who's only into the facility.
If you don't see the Lord's connection to it, that's the materialist. Right? You know, just like the jnani is also a materialist because he doesn't see the Lord's connection with it. Right? Yeah, because all this world is maya. So when they say, oh, this is not God's kingdom, this is the devil's kingdom. You know, he doesn't have control. That's also the similar kind of element. You're detaching God from the thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole nother. Then you deify, or it means the Mayavadis don't deify like that because they're considered all illusion. Yeah. But the others, they don't want the Lord to be illusion, so they deify that he's up on a pedestal, he's special, but he actually has no control in that. We run the place.
Drink and be merry.
Yes. In verses 19 to 21, Sukadeva Goswami describes the prerequisites he should complete. To leave this world, a yogi should be fixed in absolute realization. He must extinguish all material desires. He should give up his body through yogic practice while slowly pushing his life air upward from his navel to his heart. From there, the life air should be pushed to the chest, and from the chest to the root of the palate, and finally to the cerebral hole. He should then give up all material connections and go to the Supreme. Right? So this point of being fixed in the absolute and with no material desire, so whatever you're doing, it's all for Krishna. That way it'll be very easy to fix your mind on Krishna. Yes? The other part won't be as easy. You can kind of leave that part if you are not inclined, right?
Thank you.
Verses 22 to 31. Gradual process of becoming liberated. Having described the instant liberation in the previous section, Sukadeva Goswami now describes the gradual liberation, Krama Mukti. Sukadeva Goswami continued, however, O King, those yogis who wish to experience improved material enjoyment, such as transference to Brahma Loka, the eightfold mystic cities, free travel in outer space, or a situation of his own choosing in one of the millions of planets, must take with them their subtle body when they leave the gross body behind. Right, the other one, you leave the gross body behind. So this one, you want to make sure you take it with you. Right? And if you haven't, then it's generally recommended don't bother going back, just continue and go to the spiritual world. But, you know, like that. Yeah. 22, Srila Prabhupada comments. Since a materialist is generally inquisitive to experience what is actually in such planetary systems, he wants to see everything personally, right, rather than by hearing, right? Hearing's first class, seeing is second class, experiencing is third class. Right, so on this, then some of it may be second or third, but not first.
Yeah.
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 And as inquisitive persons tour all over the world to gain direct local experience, the less intelligent transcendentalist similarly desires to have some experience of those planets about which he has heard so many wonderful things. Like in this world, someone who tours about, who's seen much, he has that more of an eclectic view, that's considered higher. Mm. But from the transcendental platform, that's considered lower.
Right? Because you want to tour around and see all whatever's around here. It's not...
You must have not understood.
Yes. Does that make sense? No?
Yeah. From spiritual...
That's what I'm saying. From the spiritual platform, there's no need to tour around and see what all the different yogis and this and the mystic cities are about. You've heard that they're there. They're material. They still don't give you any satisfaction. So, but if you want to see them, then that means that's less intelligent for a transcendentalist. Right? For a materialist, then this is a step up, of course. But for a transcendentalist, it's a step down. So the less intelligent transcendentalist similarly desires to have some experience of those planets about which he has heard so many wonderful things. The yogi can, however, easily fulfill his desire by going there with the present materialistic mind and senses. The prime inclination of the materialistic mind is to lord it over the material world. And all the cities mentioned are above are features of domination over the world. The devotees of the Lord are not ambitious to dominate a false and temporary phenomena. On the contrary, a devotee wants to be dominated by the supreme predominator, the Lord. A desire to serve the Lord, the supreme predominator, is spiritual and transcendental, and one has to attain this purification of the mind and senses to get admission into the spiritual kingdom. And otherwise, you remain here. If you want to know these things, then the Lord will arrange. Right? So that's why it says, giving up all desire, right, in the previous one. He must extinguish all material desires, otherwise then he'll stay around here. You extinguish all material desires, then you go back to Godhead, because there's nothing here, so, and your connection with the Lord, you go there. With the materialistic mind, one can reach the best planet in the universe, but no one can enter into the kingdom of God. With the materialistic mind. Senses are called spiritually purified when they are not involved in sense gratification. Senses require engagements. And when the senses are engaged totally in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they have no chance to become contaminated by material infections. Does this make some sense?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So this is the slow path. In other words, they'll do all this and eventually get to Brahma Loka, and then when Brahma at the end of his lifetime goes to the spiritual world, then you can go along with him. Right? So that's the difference in the kinds of yogis.
We've been kind of doing this until now.
During
in our
which?
Previous lives.
Basically, we've done all these kinds of things. Because if you're around here, you're not on Brahma Loka. So,
yes. Yeah. And now somehow we're making the switch, so we're trying to take the quick path.
Yes, but that's come by association. That's what's special, is that you have, you know, one devotee come and then preach, yeah. And then tens of thousands of persons, hundreds of thousands, millions of people are now interested in this direct path of yoga. Otherwise, then, you know...
Take a bit longer.
Yeah, that Lord, no, means that the quick path to hell, that's quite popular. But, you know, yeah. turning it around and going back, instead of going to hell in your bucket, you know, you're trying to get, you know, go forward in your bucket, right? You know, then.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
The previous yogi was described was bhakti yogi?
Yes. But it was developed, had the Bhakti Misra yogi there, but it also can be the same principles apply there for a pure devotional service.
You just walk into yoga process.
No, because you're talking about the yoga process linking with the Supreme. So even the Misra Bhakti can get liberated. That's not the big deal. Well, it may be taken as the big deal, but it's not the big deal. Liberation is not a big deal, seeing that the soul already is liberated. Right? It's just a matter of figuring out that you already are. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like people are looking for the keys in their pockets, can't find them, but the keys are in their pockets. You know, they're always looking in the wrong pocket. So, you know. So the soul's already liberated, so for the soul to become liberated, that's not a big deal. Right? So through this process one can get now to develop that love for Krishna. Now that's the special thing. That's what we're going to see. Because otherwise people are engaged in materialistic activities. Then you're showing that you can't be satisfied here. So then there's the idea, okay, let's get out of the material world and enjoy being out of the material world. Right? So the principle is enjoy. Right? You know, whether one is within the material world or outside the material world. Right? You know, that's the principle. So then one, pure devotion means you give that up. That's why it says mixed. Because transcendental is connected to the Lord, but there is the desire to taste that happiness of liberation. Right? So this is right in the beginning, because this has to be given up. Right? If you want to get to Vrindavan, then that must be given up. Is that the business? Okay. The pure devotees, on the other hand, are concerned only with the spiritual body, right? Not with what you can do in the material world. Right? Because to have a situation in the material world, you have to have a material body. Therefore, you have to maintain the subtle body to function. They have unrestricted movements throughout all existence, including the spiritual world. Fruit of workers, gross materialists can never move unrestrictedly. The yogi who retains the subtle body gradually becomes purified and reaches the highest planet, Brahmaloka, by mystic ascension through the Shishumara, etc. Right? The Shishumara is the Milky Way. So it's a lot of planets.
Yeah. It goes through all of them?
Yeah, well, you have to get from wherever you are, and you have to get up through there and get up to Brahmaloka. So it's...
You visit them?
I don't know if you have to visit them, but you have to go through the Milky Way. So the point is when you get up there, it's all people. We see stars, but up there it's all people. You know. Yeah, no, it's a very long... That's why it said the yogic path, the gradual path, is very slow. It takes a long, long time. You know, basically it takes until the end of Brahma's lifetime. Right? So that means, you know, another... How you say it? Yeah, another, you know, 75 trillion years. You know? Or you could just this lifetime. Just this lifetime, 75 trillion years. No? Okay. Well, at the time. Sorry?
That's a side point.
At the time of final devastation, he may transfer from Brahmaloka to Vaikuntha. Footnote 10. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. First, they go to the presiding deity of fire, Vaishvanara. This is the level of Swarga. By means of the Akasha, through the Shushumna Nadi, by the path to Brahmaloka. That Nadi is located outside the body, since it is filled with luminaries. Having given up all impurities, not being attached to anything, they proceed to the circle of stars located higher in the form of a dolphin, which is related to the Lord. That circle starts with stars such as Aditya, Punarvasu, and ends with the Dhruva star. This is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.23. Right, so this is the Shushumna Nadi. Right? There's the Idapingala and Shushumna, but you have what's in the body and you have what's outside. Because right? You have the sun and moon and you have the Shushumna. So they have to go through that. At the tail of Shishumara is the pole star. Its body extends around the sky, following the path of the sun, with the 27 constellations situated on parts of its body. Passing through this circle of stars belonging to Vishnu, which is the navel of the universal form, with a subtle body which is very subtle and pure, he alone, separated from others, because he does not go to Swarga, arrives at Mahaloka, worthy of worship, where the sages who live for a Mahakalpa, lifetime of Brahma, enjoy. After this, if he desires, out of curiosity, he may stay there until the end of the day of Brahma.
At the end of the day, seeing the three worlds burning, he departs from Mahaloka because of the heat and goes upward to Brahmaloka. That lasts for two Paradhas, Brahma's life, in which there are space vehicles used by the perfected beings. So you could say as one Paradha is done, now we're in the second one. Like that. So means the whole point is you have to stay until the end of his life. So you can go through this, but the point is this is purity, and you can't have attachment to the sensual enjoyments of Svarga, right? Because that's where he starts. So only when that's given up, then he can move through the Shishumar, the Shishumna Nadi through the Shishumar and get to Maharloka. Then he can either go from there up to Brahmaloka, or he can stay for a day of Brahma there. Right, and then when it gets a bit too hot, then he moves up. Yes.
Means the yogis, they still may desire the heavenly.
That's where they start. Yeah, it means that they may have the desires for siddhis and otherwise, what are you going to do with siddhis? Smaller than the smallest, and if no one's around to notice, what does it matter?
They can't see you.
Yeah, you know, you can reach from here and touch the moon. You know, it's like, you know, unless someone's going to appreciate it, what's the point? You know, how many times are you going to reach and touch the moon? Right? Right? You know, especially if you know you get up there and touch it, some brat on the moon, you know, like that, you know, hits it with a stick or something. Yeah, so, you know, it's just going to be. Yeah. Problems with touching the moon.
Waste of time.
Yeah. Okay. In Brahmaloka, the only existing pain is compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service and who are suffering miseries in the material world. The yogi may continue his purification and so move upward to the spiritual world. He can do so by merging his ego in the Mahatattva. In this way, he comes to the point of self-realization, right? Because Mahatattva means you have the aspect of I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's the ego that's the basis of material existence. So if you want to go to Vaikuntha, you have to leave that in the Mahatattva. So when you say merge it, it goes back. You leave it, it goes back anyway. It's not that you have to worry about putting, it's not like a shopping cart, you have to take it back over and, you know, that. It goes on its own. You have to just let go of
this.
Yeah. You just have to let go of it. In this way, he comes to the point of pure self-realization, thus attaining perfection, associating with the supreme, with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction. This is his constitutional state. Those who attain such devotional perfection are never again attracted by this material world, nor do they ever return. Right? So he's pointed out the slow path. That, you know, either you can go through and get involved in all these, or you can go quickly through that and just sit on Brahmaloka. But in any case, you're not going back to Godhead until the end of Brahma's lifetime. But you're going to do that by merging the false ego into the Mahatattva and then getting there. So we see they're bhakti yogis, but it's bhakti misra yoga. Excuse me. Yoga misra bhakti, yes.
Made of tomato.
No, the other one is that it's predominantly yoga, and you've mixed a little bhakti just to get it to function.
Yeah. Maharaj, can these yogis become distracted and not go back?
They're starting off at Swarga, and there's 22 of them. Now you can imagine the ultimate theme park. So, yes, you could. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 31, the impersonalists who aspire to merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti or effulgence of the Supreme Lord but have no conception of loving devotional service to him in his personal form in the spiritual manifestation may be compared to certain species of fish who, being born in the rivers and rivulets, migrate to the great ocean. They cannot stay in the ocean indefinitely, for their urge for sense gratification brings them back to the rivers and streams to spawn. Similarly, when the materialist
becomes frustrated in his attempts to enjoy himself in the limited material world. He may seek impersonal liberation by merging either with the causal ocean or with the impersonal Brahma Jyotir effulgence. However, as neither the causal ocean nor the impersonal Brahma Jyotir effulgence affords any superior substitute for association and engagement of the senses, the impersonalist will fall again into the limited material world to become entangled once more in the wheel of births and deaths, drawn on by the inexhaustible desire for sense engagement. But any devotee who enters the kingdom of God by transcendental engagement of his senses in devotional service, and who associates with the liberated souls and the personality of Godhead there, will never be attracted to the limited surroundings of the material world. Right? So we're talking here is that the yogis who are only following the process of liberation don't know about the personal form of the Lord. So they're only meditating on the form to get themselves to that position. But they will come back. So they actually never get really very much beyond. Right? But those who understand and then give up that controlling, enjoying attitude with that devotion, they go to the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? They don't come back. So that's the point. Is that... Yeah. We should further note in this verse the two words santam and anandam, which denote that devotional service to the Lord can really bestow upon the devotee two important benedictions, namely peace and satisfaction. The impersonalist is desirous of becoming one with the Supreme, or in other words, he wants to become the Supreme. This is a myth only, but it doesn't exist. The mystic yogis become encumbered by various mystic powers, and so have neither peace nor satisfaction, because you're still trying to enjoy anything. You are going to be encumbered by these, by lack of peace and lack of satisfaction. So neither the impersonalist nor the yogi can have real peace and satisfaction, right? It means the yogi who's taking this slow path, right? But the devotee can become fully peaceful and satisfied because of his association with the Supreme Whole. Footnote 11. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 19.149, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Shakali Ashanta. Because the devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruit of workers desire material enjoyment. Jnanis desire liberation. And yogis desire material opulence, right? Because opulence means influence, right? Furthermore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. Right? So if there's desire other than that service to Krishna, one will not be peaceful. Where is the elevators? Just looking for what's an 11 and not quotation mark. Yeah. Sometimes they're very similar depending on the font. Right? Therefore, merging in the absolute or attaining some mystic powers has no attraction for the devotee. Attainment of love of Godhead means complete freedom from all other attractions. The conditioned soul has many aspirations, such as becoming a religious man, a rich man, or a first-class enjoyer, or becoming God himself, or becoming powerful like the mystics, and acting wonderfully by getting anything or doing anything. Right? Mm. And one can say, this, or this, or this, and one's thinking, no, this, and this, and this.
Yes.
Right?
It's all good.
Right? Because here, I mean, at least a religious man, a rich man, or a first-class enjoyer. Right? Yeah. Come on.
It's all good.
They all go together. Yeah. Those are good.
They will go together.
I have faith.
Yes.
But all these aspirations should be rejected by the prospective devotee who actually wants to revive his dormant love of God. If you want to do that, then you have to give those up. If you have other ideas, then hey, no problem. The impure devotee aspires after all of the above mentioned material things by perfection of devotion. But a pure devotee has none of the tinges of the above contaminations, which are the influence of material desires, impersonal speculations and attainment of mystic powers. When it can attain the stage of love of God by pure devotional service or by, quote, a learned labor of love, end quote, for the sake of the devotee's lovable object, the personality of Godhead. To be more clear, if one wants to attain the stage of love of God, he must give up all desires for material enjoyment. He spent a nice paragraph, and it says, to make it more clear, if you want to attain love of God, you have to give it all up.
Forget it, yeah.
He should refrain from worshipping any of the demigods, and he should devote himself only to the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He must give up the foolish idea of becoming one with the Lord, and the desire to have some wonderful powers, just to get the ephemeral adoration of the world. The pure devotee is only favorably engaged in the service of the Lord without any hope of emolument. Emolument?
No.
Hmm? Emolument. And that means?
Emolument.
You're not going to go out and get a colorful tattoo. This emo. No. Emolument means expecting something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Payment.
Without any hope of emolument, right? If you're going to payment, okay. This will bring about love of Godhead, or the stage of Shantam and Anandam, as stated in this verse. Concluding his commentaries on verses 15 to 31, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that there are two paths to Brahman. The first path is direct liberation. This is described in verse 21 with the words, Nirvidya murdhan vishrijet param gata. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. The second path is gradual liberation, which is described in verses 22 to 31. Both of these paths are inferior to the process of direct devotional service, right? Because these are indirect, because they're mixed. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 28, right? Because here he also pointing out the yoga, just which is superior. So we see what is connected to bhakti is superior. It's quicker. It's more efficient. So then that means, okay, the yoga process becomes better by adding bhakti. So now, if we want to take the really pure, you know, American understanding, then that means the pure bhakti, that must be better yet.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Does that make sense? You know, why bother with everything else?
Yes. You know, we want the best.
Yeah. So in other words, you know, that's the one aspect that works to their advantage. So, the idea is that, therefore, it's bhakti that's the special thing. Right? Not the yoga, even though you're getting so many amazing things from it. That's not what's special. Bhakti's what's special, because it makes it work better. And it actually can give you liberation, while the other process won't on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So, naturally, then, from this, we'll progress forward to pure devotional service.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Maharaj?
Yes.
And bhakti is the only process which remains the same. Like if we didn't make it now, then we still continue.
Yes.
From the same.
So the other ones, it's how far you get. That's all. So that's why if you want to perfect yourself with yoga, pick the Krita age, because you have 100,000 years. You know, try to do it nowadays, it might not work out so good. Right.
Three-day yoga retreat.
Better than a two-day.
Yeah.
No, not so good. Not so good. And it would be a problem. Could you imagine what the retreat would have to do? You have all these, you have this room full of yogis. And then they all, they all go back to Godhead or something like that, and you have all these bodies laying there. What do they do with them? How did they explain all this?
It was a success.
Yeah, true.
Guru goes to jail.
Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in the Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 28 that direct devotional service to Sri Krishna is the most auspicious means of deliverance from material existence. Right? There's auspicious means where it's the most auspicious. There may be other paths of liberation, even those mentioned in passing within the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, but they are still conditional, e.g. dependent upon the Desha Kalapatra. Pure devotional service is the independent and supreme process. Right? So, where these things are being exactly explained, one can say, well, if it's about pure devotional service, why explain these? Right? But then, in the same light, why explain, you know, the forest of material enjoyment? Right? So, in other words, it's explaining how things work properly, because here it's explaining how the yogi can actually use it properly, not these other things. Right? But, then it goes on to show how even that is not good enough. Right? That's not the best. Because we have to remember that ultimately what's good for the benefit of everybody, but ultimately that the question is further refined into about someone who is about to die. So you have to get more down to essence if that's what you're dealing with. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.14, so this is Jiva Goswami now. Yeah, oh, okay, in the Bhakti Sundara. Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.14 it is stated, unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service, bhakti yoga, under the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate. The phrase used in the original Sanskrit is smaretha, which in the context of this verse indicates jnana yoga, upon the universal form of the Lord. At the end of his prescribed duties, okay. Kriya avasane is the original Sanskrit phrase, and it indicates karma yoga. This verse, 2.2.14, is spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami to illustrate the conditional nature of both karma and jnana. Bhakti yoga arises naturally in the heart of the spiritually awakened soul. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.15-32, Sri Sukadeva presents these yogas as means by which a yogi may either quickly or gradually attain liberation. Short of reviving his transcendental relationship with the Lord as his eternal servitor, the yoga system is not freed from weeds that choke the growth of the bhakti creeper in the heart. Even though yoga purifies one of sinful activities and promotes knowledge of the self as spirit instead of matter, but still the weeds still grow. Because the weeds are to enjoy the material world, to control and enjoy it. So it can be done on a more subtle platform, so the heart can be more pure. Right? But it's still, it doesn't get rid of them. Yoga won't get rid of them. Right? Only bhakti will get rid of them. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Therefore, Srila Sukadeva Goswami urges, Bhagavatam 18, Vaishnavanam amanati tat. The yogi should know that everything is connected with Krishna. With these words, the great sage advocates Mr. Bhakti. In other words, what one desires to attain from this practice of karma and jnana or mystic yoga, he should be careful to harmonize it with the goal of bhakti yoga. Footnote 12. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 18, the devotee tries to engage everything in his service and does not create perplexities by falsely lording it over the creation of God. But so, in other words, we're dealing with here, we have to be able to appreciate this Mr. Bhakti from two perspectives. One is, when you're talking about karma or jnana, then it's a step up. If you're talking about pure devotional service, it's a step down. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the point is if we're on the materialistic platform, then this karma, jnana, misra, bhakti as being given here, then that is progressive. As long as your goal is pure devotional service. So you engage those things of meditation in this world that one is absorbed in, connecting it to the Lord. That will purify the heart, that will move you forward. But as a process to remain at, as something recommended, that we're not talking about. That's why then, after describing it, we'll say pure devotional service is better. But it's useful as long as it's engaged in the service of pure devotional service. Does it make sense?
It's a tool.
Yeah, it's a tool.
Can we say that when devotees, after practicing devotional service, they get interested in those yogas and everything else, how paravidya kind of things?
It can be a distraction. That's what the problem is. It depends. If they're doing it according to Shastra in the proper ways, then it's kind of going sideways. You know, like when the market goes sideways, you don't make any profit. You don't lose, you don't make any profit. You know, it's the same kind of thing. But if they're going, if they're approaching it from the new age, that's a step down. See, for a karmi, new age is a step up because there's some subtleties, there's some concepts of something greater than ourselves, greater powers at work. So it's for a regular old karmi, that's actually a better status. But for a devotee, it's a step down. Prabhupada's mentioned this. Because it means many devotees, new age is kind of a new thing. But it's quite an old thing. It's quite old. It's been called new age since the 1930s. That's where it was dubbed new age. But otherwise, we see back into the 1800s that people are talking about all these kind of eclectic elements of the East and, and Egypt and, all these kind of little things. And, Ouija boards have been around for a long time.
So it's old age.
Yeah, so it's old age, yeah. But if you called it old age, no one's interested. Well, new age, it sounds like that. Because then new age, what is that? Old age means you're getting old. But new age, then what does that mean? You're getting young, new? You're getting... It's one of those kind of, how people are comfortable with it. Yes?
If somebody's practicing Kama Shubhakti at the end of their life, as a devotee, then does that mean they're going to have to take another life and continue that? Or is there any chance of going back to Godhead?
It's just whether they remember Krishna or not.
Okay, so it's got nothing to do with...
The point is, what you remember is what you find is shelter.
Yes.
So is it the karma, is it the misra, or is it the bhakti?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the point. Okay. So it's just a matter of someone remembers Krishna, they'll go back to Godhead. They don't. If it's karma misra, then there's a good chance to go to the heavenly planets. Mm.
But there's no, it's not absolute that you must be practicing pure devotional service to go back to God.
No. But that's the recommendation. Because the point is whatever you leave here with is what you end up there with.
So you mean you'll go there and then you have to come back?
No, it means you'll go there with whatever mentality you left here with.
But it won't be suitable, so then you get kicked out.
No, the point is you've remembered Krishna, you go there, but it's not that you can't get distracted. The yogic Brahmins, they're distracted.
So they just hang out there in the pastimes, but I'm not actually in the pastimes?
Yeah, you hang out in the place where the pastimes happen, but you're never quite at the right place at the right time. No, because the point is why did you remember Krishna in the first place?
Yeah.
Because you're a devotee. So as you come in contact with then you'll start to get the interest and it'll develop. But it's much more efficient if you already have that mentality and then therefore very quickly you can move into the pastimes. You know, it's just like... Examples may not work. Okay, let's say someone's planned a vacation. Okay? And, it's after some time. But when do you want it to happen?
Yesterday.
Yesterday would have been the best, right? No? Yeah. Okay, so that's the point. So, something so wonderful and important as prema, you kind of want it to happen immediately rather than hanging around and not kind of getting into it as quickly as you could. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why it's recommended, because that's the natural mentality.
But if you must hang around, it's better to hang around there than here, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. But the point is therefore, if it's better to hang around here, that you have to remember Krishna at the time of death. Therefore, you would want to be involved in things connected to Krishna. So at the time of death, that's what you remember. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it still comes out to be basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's what it is. 6 1/2 dozen. You know. What is it? 6 1/2 dozen or the other or something. I can't remember. It's been so long. Is there a difference between 6 1/2 dozen?
No.
No. So that's the point. Okay. So he should be careful to harmonize it with the goal of bhakti yoga. Those who fail to do this, despite great accomplishment and fruit of work, mental speculation, and mystic power, are called duratmas. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, another nice points. What was it? Duratmas, and what was the other one? It was dur. He also had some other names. Yeah, Duratnyam. The word Durat means fools who think the body of Vishnu is material. They wrongly conclude the pure spiritual form of the Lord to be material. In verse 33, Sukadeva goes beyond Mr. Bhakti, declaring without any compromise. For those who are wandering in the material world, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than that aimed at the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. Srila Sridhar, that's why it's important to essence, not volume.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when things are discussed by volume, you know, it's unless it's volume of pure devotional service. But otherwise, it's not as important as what's essential.
Does
that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was thinking, what's the volume of pure devotional service if 1 + 1 is still 1?
But, yeah, let's see. But what is that 1?
That's everything.
Yes, so it's already... there isn't anything more than 1. That's why 1 + 1 still is 1, because there's only the Lord. Yeah. So then it's okay. But then, you know, you don't get into all the... Yeah, so then still it's only 1. It's not numbers. Yeah. Okay. That's the point.
In this one chapter, Sukadeva Goswami will go through all the processes and then recommend bhakti yoga. This one chapter only. So what's the point of all the other chapters which we're dancing into?
Then what is pure devotional service? What? Because, in other words, he's given these points that one can be distracted by these various aspects, but then how does that apply in a devotee's life? So then you go through all these different aspects. You know, you even have a 9th canto of dealing, do you want to be a man or a woman? Right? You know? Yeah, you have that story of that one king. He got cursed, and so for 1 month he's a man, 1 month he's a woman. Like that. And after a while, the citizens kind of get, you know, a little annoyed at this. You know? Right? You know, so these kind of things are, you know, there's nothing left on not dealt with.
No stone unturned.
Yes. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, quote, in the material world there are many persons seeking the path of liberation by performing austerities, yoga, and other spiritual activities, but they are not the right path. That is confirmed in this verse 33 by the word nahi, certainly not. Other than devotional service, yato bhakti yoga, no other path is auspicious, Shiva. That is to say, happy and free from obstacles. The activities that please the Lord are described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service to the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self.
is that ends Jiva Goswami's comment. In the next section, Srila Sukadeva Goswami glorifies the direct process of devotional service. So he's shown within bhakti, bhakti yoga, misra, bhakti, the quick and the slow path. But then he points out the direct path, the unmixed path, that's better. Verses 32 to 37. Sukadeva Goswami recommends bhakti yoga. Chapter 2 ends with Sukadeva Goswami's personal recommendation of the bhakti process. Now, we notice that there's the position of elevating oneself, that one is absorbed in the universal form and all that. But we notice that one yogi, having accomplished that, then takes advantage of the facilities. While the other one doesn't, he just moves on to that meditation, fully onto the Lord. Right? So then we see is that the devotee, in other words, that meditation on the universal form is useful to get to the transcendental position. Does that make sense? So that's the part that's useful to us, yes.
It appears that this kind of discussion is the same as in Gita, but just more detailed.
Yes, more detailed. That's what I was saying, is that Gita's the ABCs. There's nothing new. It's just now further detail is given. And just like here, he's giving more detail, but now he gets into even more than that.
Yeah,
like that. Because you always take it through these levels. Because you have to be able to take the body of knowledge that you're dealing with and be able to see its position. Then, you know, because otherwise there's so many facts with it, then you don't know where it connects. Then discussing it, then once it's clear, then you move on, and then so you're broadening the view. Does that make sense? So even if you want to preach at a yoga ashram or something, then this element of bhakti and the meditation on the universal form, that direct attaining to the liberation by meditation upon the Lord, but understanding the Lord's form to be eternal, that will actually get you something. But if you think it's temporary, it'll only get you partial. You'll just get out and come right back. So then these are things that they could appreciate. And then when they understand about that, then what does that mean, the Lord? Who is this Lord? Then they get that association and hear about bhakti yoga. Does that make sense? So, and, you know, we're talking about actual ashrams, not just, you know, the yoga studio. Because you can talk these things in the yoga ashrams, direct Vedanta, and they're all nodding their head, and yes, and this is good, and, you know, you should come back and discuss more, and stuff like that. But if you go to the yoga studios, then you don't want to talk all this stuff. Which is funny.
I did last summer.
The point is, you can. Just people are not confident.
No, but that's what happened. they weren't very comfortable.
No, but you have to know what's the good. Means, in other words, you gauge, because you don't know what's there. You get a general thing from, you know, discussions before. Then you throw something out and you gauge each word as is going. As you say the word, you see the reactions. And if you start seeing the energy going back, then you know to adjust the words until it's coming forward again.
I saved it. It went.
Yeah.
They want me back. So.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is you understand and you adjust and you find what areas. Because even they're saying there in the yoga, the range that's there between karma and jnana and all this, because most of them just drop the jnana yoga aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Most don't even do meditation anymore, pranayama anymore, any of these things, because it's just people can't handle it. Pretzels, yes. Pretzels are popular. They've always been popular, still are popular.
That's the thing.
No?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. Chapter 2 ends with Sukadeva Goswami's personal recommendation of the bhakti process, particularly the hearing, chanting, and remembrance of the glories of the Lord. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyo bhagavan vinam. 2.2.36. Srila Sukadeva Goswami assures Maharaj Parikit that this Bhagavat Katha is exactly in accordance with the Vedic version. For Lord Krishna personally taught it to Brahma. Turning from the difficult process of gradual elevation by yoga practice to a different yet most auspicious practice, Sukadeva now presents direct devotional service to Lord Krishna. 32 to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur emphasized that the sublime process of bhakti yoga is different and superior to the direct and indirect methods for attaining liberation described in the previous section. So they have direct and indirect. Direct means it's connected to the Lord. Indirect means it's not, that's not the important element. But now there's even a better system than that. Right? So the direct bhakti, no yoga misra stuff. Right? Now the path... So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now the path to attain the ultimate perfection of all is described, because it produces bhakti yoga or prema. There is no other auspicious path, a path without obstacles. Just as the two paths just described produce liberation, this path produces prema. Because this path produces the most excellent result, prema, even that path leading to the attainment of prema is far superior to the liberation attained by the two paths. Bhakti yoga cannot be described as a method to attain liberation, since its goal is prema. Footnote 13. Right? It means you're looking for liberation, then it can be mixed a little bit, but it itself as a path is not aimed at liberation. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita 8:26-28, the Lord says, according to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back, but when one passes in darkness, he returns. Although the devotee knows these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical or fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these. And at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Right, so these other two yoga, the passing in the dark or in the light, he's not bewildered by this. He's only interested in pure devotion. So whatever benefits are in all these other recommended processes, he already gains them. Right, like here, hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord. Right, so we're studying Bhagavatam. Is there any difference between these two? That means in bhakti yoga, the performance of bhakti yoga, it automatically includes the other. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not a separate study of the shastras as such, like the jnanis do. Right? This is that it's devotional service. So it even doesn't, even the forms you don't see really change much. You know, it's much more pleasant. You know, we can sit around and this and that here. We don't have to be so careful and austere. You see, scholars, they have a lot of problem in general environments. They have to have a very specialized environment. Right? Then they can function.
Is that the case of any other process that they're dependent on the environment?
Yes, that was the point before. Yes. That was mentioned. These other processes are encumbered by the dependency on the material environment. Like, okay, let us say... you have a library. Okay, let's have a decent library. But you have a long library. And on each side of the library, there's doors. And behind each of these doors, there's a scholar sitting. Okay? That's one scenario. The other is you have a library. And then you have long hallways where there are doors way at the end of these hallways with little rooms in them where scholars sit. Which of the two would they prefer? The second, right? Because it's farther away. The other one, it's like, you know, any idiot, you know, freshman could walk into their room. You know, that's not going to be good. Right? So they're always far away, other buildings, someplace, some stairway through this. So you can never get to them. And in that environment, then they can sit and study.
That's true.
You understand? So that's point is we don't follow it like that. We're studying. And we're studying actually more developed or more elevated subject matter, but it doesn't require that environment because it's just hearing and chanting about the Lord.
Yeah.
So it's already included.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
I was just thinking that to study in Gurukul, you have to be a real yogi to concentrate because there's, you know, so many things are going all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. But it's also the puckability. If it's grass, all grass, you don't, it doesn't affect you as much.
Yeah.
We get more effect here because it's the building here.
so that it echoes. The grass doesn't, so you don't get the sharp sounds. Hmm. But at the same time, yes, you have to be more focused. Hmm. More time, right? Birds are starting. Okay, then there was still something more. No, that was the end of that. So we're at the top of 47. Srila Prabhupada writes.
Classic.
Srila Prabhupada writes, as will be clarified in the next verse, devotional service or direct bhakti yoga is the only absolute and auspicious means of deliverance from the grip of material existence. There are many indirect methods for a deliverance from the clutches of material existence, but none of them is as easy and auspicious as bhakti yoga. Right? So now what's interesting is now we've shifted. Now anything other than bhakti yoga is indirect. You know, but within the indirect, there's direct and indirect. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, just like when you shift to the spiritual world, then that's pious. Yeah. Material world is the whole thing is impious. But then when you shift to the material world from that perspective, then there is pious and impious.
Yes.
Right? You know, and as you shift down within the impious, there are pious and impious. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, you don't shoot anyone on your block. The guys on the next block you shoot. Then that's considered, he is a pious gang member.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You understand? So, like this, it just keeps, you always have this perspective. There's always better and worse within, you know, better or worse.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
In our practice of devotional service, we should always take direct first.
Yes. Direct is always first. And then where we find we're not able to appreciate direct, then we can use indirect. But still, we're using the indirect, which is the recommended indirect process, which we'd call direct. Right? In other words, it's connection to the Lord. So in other words, the indirect without connection to the Lord, that we aren't interested in. Right? But that indirect that's connected to the Lord, that's useful. So because it's secondary and it's only used if there's a problem, you don't discuss that so much. You just, like, let's say we're talking about a resort. What are we going to discuss in the resort? The facilities, right? But which facilities? Are we going to talk about the great sewage system?
No.
You know, about, you know, that there's a, you know, that there's a nurse that comes regularly and visits to take care of, you know, anything or like that. No, you talk about, you know, the positive things, the primary things, right? So that's the whole point. It's not that they're not there, it's just not what the discussion's about. So sometimes devotees think these elements don't have any importance at all. But it's not that, it's they're secondary. Therefore, they only apply where secondary is useful. But primary is always what's discussed, and therefore if primary is able to be applied, why would you use secondary? Does that make sense? But if it's there, then it's already there, and it's already been discussed in these other processes. Like that. So Bhagavatam is showing how to connect it to the Lord. And the details of yoga and, you know, all these other sciences, then they're already discussed in other shastras. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? So therefore, it's not a problem. Yes?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the point.
Yeah.
You have very good, and then if you don't have very good, then you have yes or no.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay. There are many indirects for deliverance from the clutches of material existence, but none of them is as easy and as suspicious as bhakti yoga. So we see is actually when they're mixed with bhakti yoga, they become more efficient. So therefore, if we're going to deal with these indirect elements, we're always going to deal with them connected to the Lord. We're never going to deal with them on their own. That's why when one professes these elements of, you know, just the karmi world and just puts a thin veneer of devotional service on it, it won't be as effective as if it's properly combined. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, once entering into it, what is the connection? You have to come out of it to then show, okay, here's the connection. Does that make sense? So, okay, it's connected, but it's not recommended.
And when we don't accept, like taking on the culture, that is, then it's weakened.
It's weakened because the connections are in the engagement of the senses and the mind, and that's where the culture comes out. Mm. Right? Yes. Because the philosophy is the intellectualization on that, but you have to apply it. That's the culture. Yeah. The means of jnana and yoga and other allied disciplines are not independent in delivering a performer. Right? Like that. So jnana and yoga, they're not independent. Such activities help one to reach the stage of bhakti yoga after many, many years. Right? So they're not independent. In other words, it's the devotional aspect within them that makes them dynamic. But one can be using the devotional aspect just to make it dynamic, not that you care about the devotional aspect. Right? So that's why it may take many, many years. That's why you have people that are doing all these things that we do, and still they're not really coming in contact with Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's the thing, is that they themselves aren't dynamic. In the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, it is said that those who are attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute are liable to many troubles in the pursuit of their desired goal. And the empiricist philosophers, searching after the Absolute Truth, realize the importance of Vasudeva realization as all in all after many, many births, right? So that's what it means, slow. When it says many years, it means many, many births. Not just, he doesn't say after some births or many births, he says many, many. So many, many can mean a lot.
Usually means many.
Yeah, you know, like that. Because in other places we hear of hundreds, thousands, like that.
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita 7.19. As far as yoga systems are concerned, it is also said in the Bhagavad Gita 6.47 that amongst the mystics who pursue the Absolute Truth, the one who is always engaged in the service of the Lord is the greatest of all. Right. So in other words, the greatest of all the systems is bhakti yoga, right? So if one is interested in systems management, the best is bhakti yoga. Yes?
It manages all the others.
Yes. And the last instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, 1866, advises fully surrendering unto the Lord, leaving aside all other engagements or different processes for self-realization and liberation from material bondage. Right? So all the others are you know. And the purport of all Vedic literatures is to induce one to accept the transcendental loving service of the Lord by all means. Right, so these others, as processes are left, their common element with bhakti yoga, that's useful. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right, in other words, take any of these systems, because bhakti, Krishna is everything, therefore his process of bhakti is connected with everything. But now, the point is that if you see it in bhakti, it has every aspect of the system has its place, and there's nothing missing. But if you take one of those aspects and separate it, it's incomplete in itself. So you have to fill it in with other aspects. Do you understand?
Oh, yeah.
So when we're taking what will be called these various material systems, we're taking the part that's the natural part connection with bhakti, that's part of bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
We're leaving the part that's been added on because it's an incomplete system on its own. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what's happening. So that's why in the definition of all these systems, they can be taken and understood as synonymous with bhakti yoga, but at the same time as also as not. It's just a matter of which aspect. So Sukadeva is emphasizing those parts that are seeing the connection there within the system, but even better is just work with bhakti. It already includes those systems.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This is the point at which it becomes, I say, the defining it becomes difficult because there's only bhakti yoga. You know, it's just like, let's say I have a Lego set, okay? And it has so many parts, and let's say I can make a truck out of it, okay? Yeah? Okay, now one person is just into wheels, so he takes the wheel. But he wants a more complete system, but he doesn't have any other Lego parts to make what he wants to make with it. So he has to get, you know, sticks and leaves and other things laying around the house and connect it to his wheel. Does that make sense? So, in bhakti yoga, you just take the wheel, leave everything else. So he can say, no, but it's the same. Or you can say, oh, see, in bhakti it uses this, therefore that whole system's all right. No. We're saying that part of it's all right. Because that part is actually part of the Lego set. The other stuff's not part of the Lego set. So when we say, oh, that means, let's say you have so many different systems, they all have their origin in bhakti.
Yes.
Right? But they're being performed without that understanding of bhakti, therefore they're considered material or useless. So when we take these, bhakti already includes those, so when we define bhakti, it may look like we're defining the other systems. Or we're defining the other systems, we're talking about them in their natural state, but at the same time we're always referring to those elements that are connected back to bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's why it sometimes becomes confusing. But that's the meaning of the swan. You take the milk, leave the water.
Yeah. To distinguish on this level of knowledge, we have to really learn it, to take that only part, and that we have to know how the system works. Otherwise, right, destroy everything out, or we take it as it is, and it doesn't work, then we complain, this and that.
Yes. That's why Bhagavatam has this much technical aspect. Because then we can distinguish. Because the idea of Bhagavatam being our book, then we study it. Since we want to be absorbed in the Lord's pastimes, then we study the first 9 cantos so that we're qualified. Like that. But this is where all this comes. And then as a preliminary to this, then Gita is recommended. So it gives all the technical aspects. Like, you know, those last 6 chapters, that's all technical. You know, before that, the first 6 are more generic. You know, a lot of facts, but it's generic. But the last 6, it gets much more into the refined. But it's still pointing out, it's still about bhakti. That's the real thing. And then here it's more. So yes, that's why the more we understand, then the more easy it is to discern. Otherwise, then we might, you know, take something that in the wrong way. Like that, get distracted. Okay, so we're empty.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai.
Jainita Gaura.